Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good morning, Mr. Edwards. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Allen. On a snowy day, I think we can rest assured now and be satisfied that winter is here. You know, this snow will not see it disappear until probably late March, maybe even the first week in April of 2020. 2020 is going to be a big year, elections and everything like that. What do we got this morning, Don, for our listening audience across the world?
Well, there's a lot of things going on. You know, we have a murder of a young lady Thanksgiving. We have the lack of the reporting and the real story about what happened, which we'll get into later, of course. And the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul making a lot of money, Mr. Edwards, on this snow. You know, they were towing on and plowing on Thanksgiving Day. People were running outside, and especially in my neighborhood, and looking for their cars.
That's really not funny. It cost you, what does it cost you to get it out there? After day one, what, $100, $125, $135 to recover your car? Yeah, at least that.
It's crazy.
Wow.
It's just ridiculous.
Wow.
What can you do?
And I noticed both cities take it. This has really hit hard, the so-called inner city poor people, you know, black, white. They take the cars way out in... way at the far northern end of what, Fridley, is it, or Blaine up there? You know, man, that's a long ways out there. And in order to get your ride, man, so, you know, you got to find somebody to drive you out there, I guess, and you got to do the paperwork, and you got to tell them you got long lines. You remember they used to, in Minneapolis, they used to have it right there across the street from Munsingware. You remember my Munsingware there?
Absolutely.
Toll lot there. Yeah. They said, nah, got to give the contract to our cousins and uncles, and none of them look like us. I mean, you know, black men. But anyways, hey, we would just kind of want to move on here, if you will, but it is another snow day. By the way, Thanksgiving, I imagine a lot of folks in the upper one percentile had an enjoyable Thanksgiving. Our leader, our military and political leader, Donald James Trump, made a surprise, like it was a surprise, but made a surprise visit to Afghanistan, to the big military base there, Bagwan, if you will, and kind of, you know, it seemed to me, Don, that it caught some people off guard. I was kind of surprised. I thought that they, but, you know, they don't know how to read this guy. So, you know, yeah, because I was looking at all of the commentators and, you know, top-notch people that have staffs of thousands, that they really were legitimately surprised that President Donald Trump flew secretly, if you will, and landed at, the big fortified air base there, Bagwan, if you will, in Afghanistan. Kind of caught them off guard.
Yes, they did. Off guard. They didn't.
Go ahead, Don. Go ahead.
They didn't have a clue. They just didn't have a clue that he was out, you know, doing his thing and flying all the way over there. You know, they did a really good job of keeping it, you know, downplaying it and reporting the news after he was on the plane coming back. So that was a great job.
You're absolutely right. They all pretended that he was in the upstairs apartments at the White House when he was in the air on his way to have Thanksgiving dinner with America's military sons and daughters, if you will. Let me just say also our condolences going out to at least two African-American families, in this case, one female shot and killed in a so-called domestic, if you will. The other one, African-American businesswoman, Ms. Bucket, Wendy, leaving her place of business on Glenwood Avenue North, if you will, her place of business. And hears some sounds and hollering behind her. She turns. She's shot in the face, hitting, I think, if I'm not mistaken. The report hit in the meaty part of her nose, and the projectile comes to rest just under her eye. You know, if not for whatever reason, the velocity of the pellet decreased, if you will, she could have lost her eye. Very respected as a businesswoman and member of the community, we just want to send our best to her and her family, if you will, and then hopefully her business will be opening their doors pretty quick. The other one is one of fatality, a mother of a two-year-old child, a young African-American woman shot and killed. After Minneapolis police decided that it wasn't, they didn't have the time to respond a third time to threats by the gunman. They're calling it a domestic, but I understand that Raven was attempting to leave this individual who had already been charged with some domestic violence, which also, by the way, was pointed out to yours truly that in that this individual, the gunman, the murderer, had already had priors for domestic violence, which meant he should not have had a gun.
Exactly.
At the time that he opened fire and shot her, I understand, with a headshot in front of their two-year-old child, if you will. Now everyone trying to do damage control. You know, I knew something was up, Don, when I realized that there had been no interview with any member of the family of the deceased. And I discussed that with you in the production meeting even yesterday. I knew something was up, couldn't quite figure it out. You know, maybe the family was so distraught that they didn't want to be on the air and et cetera. Shoot, come to find out now, man, this is all a part of a cover-up to protect Mayor
Kapai
and city government and the MPD. Yeah, that's what it was all about.
Yeah.
Police refused to provide protection to the deceased. Boy, that's
so
scary. That's scary.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Mr. Edwards. And when I first heard of it, I went to her Facebook page because people were, you know, posting RIP, you know, our prayers going out and things like that. But, you know, I would hope when you see a murder of this magnitude happening to a young black woman in North Minneapolis or anyone else, the news, especially Channel 5 and 9, it goes in and interviews the family.
Yes.
And there were so many mistakes made. Yeah, there were so many mistakes made on, in my opinion, on this case, on this shooting, that you're right. The cover-up was going on 100%. And that's not well. That's not good. You know, why is a woman who has called the police on several occasions, and with a man who has this domestic, you know, assault and other things in his history with this
prior
particular
history.
Woman, why is prior history? Why is it not taken more seriously? Because on today, Saturday, November 30th, she should be alive. Period.
Yes, she should. Yes, she should. And the child should have not lost their mother, if you will, and they should be enjoying and preparing for the holiday season and East and Christmas, if you will. We've gone through Black Friday, big corporate, if you will. Now, I said, you know, one of the pieces of information that is emerging in community is that the assailant, if you will, had threatened members of her family and her with his weapons, if you will. She had tried desperately to get the this last time. The police made a terrible decision under color of law. The law is very clear, unless the court rules otherwise, that in America, if you will, the female, the mother, quote-unquote, is the guardian, quote-unquote, of the child or children, if you will. And I just don't understand that these police officers that Thanksgiving evening, maybe they were in a hurry to get back to their suburban homes, didn't really care about what was going on in the inner city, if you will, and were not due diligent. I mean, let's just use that word, Mr. Alvin. They were not due diligent. These police were not due diligent as it pertains to knowing and understanding the law.
On that note, our phone lines have lit up, and we might want to add. I think they have some questions. Caller 7935 is your last four. Our producers say you're live on the air. Go ahead. Caller 7935, go ahead. You're live on the air. Okay, they just want to listen to the queue. We'll try the next one here.
Okay.
Caller, you're live on the air. Last four, 7206. Go ahead. What's your question?
Hello, this is Cordell.
Hey, Cordell, how you doing,
yes,
sir?
Yes, Cordell, go ahead. What's your question, sir?
I was wondering, when did they catch the guy that did it? Was it like right away, or was it something that they had to do some investigation and find out who did it?
Oh, no, they didn't have to do an investigation because there were too many witnesses as he shot her, killed her. I'm not sure, but I think he was in custody before midnight on Thanksgiving. For whatever reason, Cordell, there's this mystery surrounding the death of this African-American woman. Of course, I maintain it's only my personal opinion, as one of the two hosts of this program, that they're trying to put the right twist on the story, that they did not know and understand Minnesota law and violated the rights of the deceased to have the police respond in an affirmative way to protect her and her child against this quote-unquote very evil person. So if you've noticed, Mr. Allen and myself were checking the newspaper as early as 4 o'clock this morning. There's really nothing there, no in-depth analysis. I mean, this was on Thanksgiving. This was a young mother killed in the presence of her child and et cetera. And everybody just seems to be like, I know what's important to people, and that is Minnesota's playing Wisconsin today in football. And so that's a conversation I was hearing last night in a couple of public arenas. And when you would ask people what they thought, sir, about the death of a young mother, gunned down, if you will, killed inside of the home, people kind of look at you like, they're kind of puzzled, like, it was an incident that took place on another planet in another galaxy. But any other questions?
If I may, it's something, I feel like I'm glad that you guys are talking about this, because we like to often talk about the violence, gun violence on black men, but the violence, the domestic violence on the men versus women, I feel like it's equally as threatening, because a lot of mental health issues in the men, and it causes them to react certain ways towards women even more violently than, how they act towards other men on the streets. So I think that what you guys are doing here is a real good conversation to have. It's unfortunate, but it's important to have this type of dialect, and I appreciate your guys' time.
All right. Thank you, sir, and we appreciate you. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other calls, Mr. Allen? Let's get him in.
Yeah, that was the last caller. Our number is 347-426-3904. Again, our number is 347-426-3904. Now, Mr. Edwards, if I'm not mistaken, over the last 10 years, there's been a substantial amount of money put into the black community for domestic violence. I remember an era between 2005 and 2010 where that was on the top of the hit list for people to go get funds and talk with the African-American community because of trauma and this and that. And agencies received from the Minnesota Department of Health, the city of Minneapolis, St. Paul, Ramsey County, Hennepin County. Domestic violence was a key talking point among the DFL here. And that's something that had to be addressed. And lawmakers at the state capitol and other places went as far as, I think, allocating a large amount of money to address this. But again, we have, and this is just my opinion again, Mr. Edwards, but we have quite a few nonprofit leaders that are of Black American descent or African American descent, whatever you choose to use, that, you know, they take nice vacations, they make a six-figure salary, but like you said, if you ask them a question or pose a question, as in this case, this young lady being shot and killed in front of her toddler in North Minneapolis, you're being toxic. They don't want to discuss this, you know, and it's very shameful, but they need to get off their behinds and do what they're supposed to do. They're not celebrities, but, you know, if you look at their social media stuff, you would think they are celebrities. So,
well,
I mean,
say this, Mr. Allen, because your point is well made, and we certainly appreciate the very sincere observations by our first caller. I'm once again puzzled. A young mother has been gunned down in front of her two-year-old child, if you will, by a man who already had displayed symptoms of serious violence and anger and et cetera. And, you know, I waited all day yesterday, Don, as we talked about in the meeting preparing for this morning's program. I was waiting for first the mayor of the city, if you will, as well as the council members. The incident, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, correctly, 26th and James Avenue North of the so-called Tangletown area. I was waiting for the council member from the Fifth Ward and his colleague from the Fourth Ward, the Councilman Ellison and Cunningham. I was even waiting for the Attorney General of the state of Minnesota, an African American, you know, to indicate his heartfelt, disappointment, if you will, and sorrow with regard to this situation. I was waiting for leadership of our nonprofits that you just made mention of to indicate what is going on. I was expecting some of those that have been, you know, well financially endowed to speak up. I was even looking, I guess I was pretty naive, I was looking for even a press conference, you know, that would include elected officials, appointed officials, anointed officials, if you will, who talk in terms that this has to end, that our women are precious, if you will, and that they must be guaranteed safety and life and et cetera. All I heard people talking about was the football game today, Minnesota and Wisconsin at TCF Field.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, let's get drunk. Yeah.
And Mr. Edwards, let's just, since we have, if you go to blogtalkradio.com/ The Ron and Don Show, we have a historical archive that goes back 10 years of these radio programs. But let's just look at March 2019. The headline, and I'm sitting here on another studio, Mr. Edwards, that's why you see me running around here reading stuff. The headline from the Star Tribune, March 12, 2019, a $100,000 state grant to fund Minneapolis-based domestic violence pilot program. Okay, according to the description of the initiative released before Tuesday's meeting, the team will focus to provide quicker investigative responses to domestic violence victims, enabling enhanced prosecution, police advocacy responses. As a result, victims and witnesses will be easier to locate. Offenders will not have time to manipulate victims, and safety planning for the victim and families will be conducted. Okay, that was a total fail for Ms. Raven Gant. Okay, and
The deceased was just, young lady shot and killed on Thanksgiving evening. Mm-hmm.
So, yes. And then one more thing, grants uplifting women is part of a $7.5 million awarded to Minnesota nonprofits. The St. Paul Foundation, the RF Foundation, the MARDAG Foundation recently awarded $7.5 million to these agencies. These agencies include Minnesota Compass, the National Women's Law Center, African American Women. Okay, let me just go down here so we can get to the nitty gritty. The grants were made by the St. Paul Foundation to the Women's, and you know what? Take Action Minnesota, Minnesota African Women's Association, Men as Peacemakers. You have a list of these agencies, and it's going to go to my point I'm going to make. You have a list of these agencies that are getting this money and basically paying a salary for someone to work inside a nonprofit and doing very little for the people in the community. And,
you know,
and
that's
it's right here
point,
in Black.
Mr. Allen, yeah, I have to cut in and say that this is really on point because, as I said, there's a significant cover-up going on as we speak with regards to the death of Raven, if you will, her brutal murder, if you will, in a situation, because I know the first thing that some of the folks say was she should have reached out when she did. She had made three calls for assistance to the Minneapolis Police Department, and two of them, they did respond. They provided some semblance of protection, but she had been attempting to get help in this situation and this terrible, terrible, dangerous, and now fatal relationship. But it was the actions of the MPD on Thursday evening where two officers, both apparently Caucasian, declined to provide safety and protection for this young mother and soon to be deceased, if you will, by the acts of a very violent human being, and as well as, of course, the child who will hope will not carry the scar of the murder of their mother. But what they're, and I have to reinforce this, Mr. Allen, to our listening audience, and et cetera, as we speak, there is a political cover-up going on in which the mayor of the city must take responsibility. City council members who talk that game, they talk a good game about what you just said, the information that you put out, because one of the things that happened is that the police that arrived that Thursday night or were supposed to be responding did not understand the Minnesota law as it pertains to custodial control, if you will, and responsibility for a child. It is that of the woman, unless a district court has ruled otherwise. And conversations have been going on all day yesterday to kind of keep a lid on it, that, you know, too many officers, if you will, particularly in these precincts with a heavy concentration of people of color, are quick to make the statement that we ain't got time, or let them kill each other. You know, we've been saying on these programs, they say that we are toxic. We have been saying on these programs for a couple of years that there is too much dismissal of the importance to provide safety for the sons and daughters of the African. And that's what happened Thursday night. And we should be shamed. Oh, I know people say, I ain't shamed. I didn't shoot her. I didn't bore. I didn't know nothing about him. No, that is much deeper than that, my friend. We should be shamed this morning, on a Saturday morning, we should be shamed that we, as the African-American community, the sons and daughters of the African, Mr. Allen, have been so nonchalant. I would like to be more diplomatic and say, you know, well, we've not responded. This is nonchalant. It's like I said, folks are more concerned with the football game between Minnesota and Wisconsin, and then getting ready for the big game with the Vikings, you know, out in Seattle on Monday Night Football. I mean, that's what they're talking about. And in the meanwhile, women of color are at risk. I mean, let's just be upfront, man. The women of color are targets of opportunity. But I guess we're being toxic on this program this morning, Mr. Allen, because I can understand if some sisters begin to bless us out as black men that we clearly do not care. And I just will refuse, and I know you do too, sir, be labeled with that. That we don't care, but that's what happened, and you're not going to get a clear explanation from the police units and the leadership in the mayor's office, et cetera, about how did this go down, because this guy had a history of domestic violence, threatening, and et cetera. In fact, the father of the deceased had been threatened numerous times by this individual who considered himself to be a tough guy, you know, and had told some friends, if you will, that he had enough sense to know that wasn't nobody going to do nothing because it was a black human being. And I think that's just outrageous, Mr. Allen. I really. But again, the phone lines, if anyone has questions, because I know a lot of people don't know anything about it, because the white media and the colored media, really, with the exception of this program, basically shut it down, mocked down, if you will.
Yep, they sure did. You're absolutely right, Mr. Edwards. And I before we have a caller, but before I go to that caller, Mr. Edwards, I want to remind people that you, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards, was the longest seated chairman of the board for the Minneapolis Urban League. During your tenure, this is Mr. Edwards, my co-host I'm talking about, during your tenure at the Minneapolis Urban League as the chairman, the longest seated chairman, and I'm going to repeat that, if anything like this were to happen in our community, yellow, red, black, or white, you could be guaranteed that it was on, there was a press conference called and every news channel covered it.
Yes.
They broke it down. And what is happening, and I'm talking about the black community, and I'm not beating up black people. Definitely. I'm black, you know, Friday, I'm black every Friday. But what I'm trying to say is that why is it when these things happen, we get no information from our black papers, from the mainstream media? I mean, you get very little, and the whole story is never told, you know, and that's a problem. And I would challenge the leaders of the Minneapolis Foundation, General Mills Foundation, Emerge, Urban Leagues, NAACP, Minneapolis and St. Paul. I would challenge all of them to have a dialogue, a open public dialogue of the reason that they sit in their butts and don't do anything. But we do have a caller, Mr. Edwards.
All right, let's get him in.
Your last four is... Okay, I'm talking to producer 2531. You're live on the air. What's your question?
Hi, Ron and Don. Lisa Clemens. So I
hey,
used to be an investigator.
How are you going? Yes.
I'm good. I'm sorry. So I was an investigator in the child abuse unit, and I could tell you without a doubt, cops don't know that law. It's sad and it's unfortunate, but cops have a 50-50 mentality, and they don't understand. Under the law, if you're not married, the custody and full rights go to the mother until a judge rules otherwise. And a lot of
which
that
you,
is
which we stated about
10
minutes ago. I'm sorry. Go right ahead, Ms. Clemens. Uh-huh.
Right. A lot of them just don't know that. And it's sad and unfortunate because when they first went out to their home, they should have recovered her child and her things. The only way he would hold her stuff is for dominance and power over her. I mean, he's 41, she's 27. Come on. The police should have removed her child from that space with her, told him he has to go to court to exert his rights to his child, and got her someplace safe. That's period. And you know I don't ever say negative.
The key, one of the key elements, there's many key elements of what you already shared with us and the previous caller, that she be secured in a place of safety. I mean, what?
That's right.
In your estimation, I mean, what happened to the extent that the officers could be so cavalier? So cavalier.
In my heart, and I mean this, Ron, because I've talked to so many cops since this incident. And I'm telling you without a doubt, they don't know that law. They don't know that law. And when I tell them, go to this statute, I even posted the statute on my page. They don't know that law. They're thinking that 50-50, he 50%, she 50%. No, no, no. The court has to decide that. When they're unmarried, I think they should have taken her someplace safe. I don't care if it was her mama's house. Clearly, her mother is here because her mother was at the hospital. So I think they should have taken her someplace safe.
And her father, who I understand both of them, that this individual, the murderer, had threatened them. By the way, what was he doing? Because this is a part of the statute that you are talking about, Ms. Clemens. The statute is such that this individual should not have had access, having been apparently,
That's exactly right. I posted that on Facebook.
Domestic violence.
Exactly.
What was he doing with the weapon?
Exactly. That's another thing that I posted on Facebook. He is convicted of domestic violence that exempts him from possession of a weapon. But hindsight 2020, the cops wouldn't know he got a gun in the property because they weren't there with a search warrant to search the property. But I still think that they should have done more background research on him and her to see where the kid would have been safer. And the kid would have clearly been safer with mom.
Let me ask this question to you, Ms. Clemens, if we could. The child, in this case, the child was 2 years old. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's what I understand. Now, the information, the rumor. No, it's more than it's not a rumor because that's how they play us. That's how the media and the Star Tribune and CCO is that there had been at least two affirmative responses by the MPD. But on Thursday night, the MPD chose, because they didn't know and understand the law, that there was no priority to protect this child and this mother.
Yeah,
and
I just don't.
The family had been threatened.
Did the police that responded at that time know, or did they find that out after the fact? Those are key factors in this too. I don't know which way it goes, but I'm telling you this, Ron. This state does not care about black mothers. Black women take a backseat. Black mothers don't have a seat at all, and that is a fact. And you know I've been fighting for years, Don. You know it as well. To bring light to us forgetting black women have a voice too. Black women are victimized on a higher level. Black women are escalating in the numbers for juvenile justice and the prison system, and there is no one addressing that. Every speech that's given talks about the black man, the black boy, as it should. But you keep forgetting them black men, them black boys came from somebody, and that's us.
Mm-hmm.
You keep forgetting when you get done with them, they come home to us.
I understand that it was a former white legislator who reached out apparently to the family and loved ones to let them know about what the law actually was, if you will. But I have to tell you, Ms. Clemens, I was so disappointed, as I said just a couple minutes ago with my colleague. I was expecting, I guess I suffer from delusion. I was expecting that leadership and et cetera would have spoken out yesterday, the day following the tragic murder of this mother, and talk in terms of domestic violence and et cetera. Like I said, I don't know if you're a sports person, if you will, but all I've been hearing is that, you know, the Minnesota-Wisconsin collegiate football game this afternoon or whatever, and the Minnesota Vikings on Monday night out in Seattle. That's what everybody was talking about. I mean, I was present.
What leaders were you expecting
out.
To speak? Who was you expecting to speak, Jeremiah?
Well, I don't want to, you know, we want to give a person like Jeremiah or his supporters an opportunity to respond to that because, see, I have to be, you know, responsible to your question.
He hasn't responded to any
That's who I was thinking about.
Ron Jeremiah has not responded to any of the homicides in his community. In fact, historically, our African-American leadership have not responded to the homicides in the black community. So I don't know why we're expecting something different from Jeremiah. Jeremiah is the worst at it. Jeremiah will only respond if a police is involved in that shooting. That's just a fact.
I see.
I have no patience for that nonsense.
All right. Well, I hope that at some point somebody other than the Run and Don program and the program, because I'm not mistaken, this is the same, obviously, Ms. Clemens, who you and your brother have the only other real community program, which airs tomorrow. I would hope that at some point the spokesman recorder and et cetera, but then, you know, the spokesman recorder, as an example, really
what, the one that's ran by Mel Reeves now? Are we serious?
Well,
Mel Reeves don't see what's on this gun violence either unless a cop is involved. I'm disgusted.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thanks for hearing me out, guys. I'm mad
all right,
today.
Thank you. Thank you again, Ms. Clemens. Okay. Don Drew.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Some names kind of got dropped there, didn't they? But anyways.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a couple more calls, Mr. Edwards, I'd like to get to.
Let's get to
caller 9272, you're live on the Ron and Don Show. Go ahead with your comment, questions, or criticism. We're ready for anything.
Yeah, you know, this is Lisa. I have not been calling on the show for a while. You know, I heard the show last week. So, hey, Ron. But I wanted to say something about our community as African-Americans and some, I guess, some of the incidents that's been happening in our community. And we have a lot, I want to point out that we have a lot of people working in our community. They just don't get the recognition. And when it's time to speak on anyone's name, it's always as if they have no credibility to do their part in the community. And we need to stop doing that. We have a lot of people out here doing the work, and they're not in front of the cameras all the time. They're doing things behind the scenes and in our schools and all that. So I wanted to talk about, as well as far as the police. We know that the police is waiting to get more officers, and we know that there's a concern about them responding to anything that's going on in the black community the community overall, all of our communities, until they get these new officers. So they're not acting right. So ignorance to the law is no excuse. That's what they tell us as citizens. Police should know better as far as what they do and don't know in our community. And it seems as if we used to have community leaders stepping up only when the camera is there. But when the camera is there, then they act like they're acting as if the problem don't even exist. Or they are trying to get some kind of specific type of funding, and if it's not there, then they won't do the work. So we need to make sure that we check ourselves working in our community, because we're putting a lot of people in front of our families, and I work in the schools. So we have a lot of children that's angry, but we don't have anyone with the professional background to respond to their issues or their families. We have a lot of people that's in the hood, in the streets, trying to respond, but we need some educated professionals with the proper background to deal with our children and the anger that they're dealing with. We have homicide and we have suicide, and we have an educational gap. We need to deal with it all, and we can't just say that there's only one person and then say that we don't have nobody else. We have the Urban League. We have the NAACP. We have our own institutions. So what's our excuse? We're steady bringing each other down while we're out here doing this work, and we're using these airways to do it. And that says a lot about our lack of ignorance. And we need to stop doing that as a people and focus on the real serious issues in our families
and
in our community.
We appreciate
it,
and we have some other calls holding. You know, I heard you enunciate the same statements that you're making on Mr. Al Flowers' program a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, same
well
as I made here.
Yeah, but, you know, one of the questions I have to
we
ask
we all need to work on that. You as well,
yeah,
Ron.
Well,
you need to work on it as well.
I don't know about we all need to work on it because there
yes, we
a lot
do.
Of people
well, you know now.
Yeah, well, no, really, I don't. We have a lot of people.
Maybe you need to pass the baton because we have a lot of people out here that's doing this work.
We can't overtalk each other. We can't overtalk.
Well, you always overtalk people.
Appreciate your call.
Thank
you. We know that you're out there and you're working hard and your boots on the ground. And again, we want to thank you and God bless you.
Yeah, we have our caller from the Midwest, our producer's telling us, Mr. Edwards. Caller, you're live on the air. I think it's Steve. Yes, go ahead.
Hello?
Steve?
Morning.
Yes, you're live.
Yes,
ahead,
Steve. Good morning. Yes, yes.
I didn't want to change the direction of your show too much, but I did want to get an update on the Susan Spiller murder case. Is there anything new with that?
What that situation is that the young man who has been certified by the District Court of Hennepin County and will go to trial unless they will plea bargain. He is looking at 40 years for the murder of Ms. Phillips. In the meanwhile, on that one, and we just had a caller who talked in terms of all the things that, you know, some of the folks are doing. What is kind of puzzling on the case of the young man and the death of Seller a little over 5 years ago is that we well remember, Mr. Allen and I have gone to our archives, we researched it, is that on the occasion of the death of Ms. Seller, which is brutal, in her home on the, 5100 block of DuPont Avenue North here in Minneapolis, a group of ministers, we want to be, you know, as accurate, sir, as history will allow. A group of ministers went and met with the county attorney, Mike Freeman, the big, powerful county attorney. And in that meeting, which that meeting was covered in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, a, you know, of course, respected publication, they indicated that they knew who the murderer was and that they would bring him in. Okay, that was the statement made. At that point, the county attorney indicated that one of the things that they need to do so that the power of the Democratic machine in Minneapolis was tight was to go across the street here in our city and to meet with the then council president, Barb Johnson, who is I've known for many years and who was a very close personal friend of the Sellers and was hard hit, hard impacted. Now, the ministers did that. There was a lot of conversation. The discussions were going on with regards to, you know, the right compensation and et cetera. Now, during that period of time, information came forward that the individual who had murdered Ms. Sellers brutally in her home had himself been ordered executed by his gang because he had violated a directive as it pertains to his activities of burglary and et cetera. Now, after that, the police seemed to stumble and fumble with regards to the investigation. In fact, the investigation was being led at that particular point by a police sergeant by the name of Ann Jokes, a high profile, and also the wife of the man that is now the assistant chief of police. And they were all talking in terms of what they were going to do. And then, you know, 4 years later, when this young man that is now in custody and has been charged as an adult, we started hearing these stories about they had lost track of him. But they're not talking about the same individual. And so here on our program, sir, we have been raising the question, is that at what point did the Minneapolis Police Department lose contact with this young man who at that time of the homicide was 14 years old? Now, they have come up with some significant evidence, sir. And it started out with a fingerprint on the top of by the sink, if you will. And then it really picked up when we were told here in Minneapolis that The Minneapolis Star Tribune reported after talking to Sergeant Joseph and the MPD's homicide depot. In fact, there was a big gathering. Mr. Allen and I have the pictures, and Chief Arredondo, you know, appeared to be required to, praise these officers. They talked in terms that a member of the homicide unit had been sent to the FBI Academy and was trained in cold cases and et cetera, and working on the cold cases, they had come up with additional information, but that they had gotten a tremendous break when this young man at the time, now 18, in fact, he just turned 19 last Thursday, that they had found additional evidence. Not only now did they have the fingerprint, they had DNA that was contained on a nail clipper. And I'll answer any question, Steve, that you may have. A nail clipper which had a small piece of nail in it, and they got his DNA. And so when they were having the hearings, which were kept very quiet, the hearings in the court, a lot of that was not mentioned until the judge, a African-American judge, by the way, Tanya Bransford, indicated that the young man, now 19 years old, would be certified to stand trial. His attorney, I'm not sure how his attorney is going to handle that, but let me pause now because I've been kind of regurgitating it and et cetera. To see any specific questions, sir, that you have on any examination that your organization has been doing in the Midwest.
Well, I just had a question about what's the motive? Did they come up with a motive? Because from what I remember, there was no – they could not come up with a motive several years ago when this all started. So,
yes, well, that's a doggone good question. It makes sense if you know what's going on or if you care. They maintained that the motive was that the – young man, 14 years old at that time, who was burglarizing the house. The only problem is he lived next door. Oops. And I'm puzzled because I have myself taken it upon myself to discuss with the Star Tribune the contradictions in the stories that they wrote over the last 5 years, because initially the Star Tribune and the police at that time, because the police did not reject the theory, that this young man was very close to the deceased. In fact, he used to help her. She had a small floral shop just a couple blocks from her home, and that's really what brought she and the former council president, Barr Johnson, together. And this young man and his sister, who I believe was 16, at the time of the homicide, they used to work with Miss Sellers in her floral shop. And one of the things was really peculiar is that they used to walk the dog. She entrusted them with the dog. The young man and his sister had been in her home numerous times. I refer our listening audience across the world back to stories in the Minneapolis Star Tribune with regards to that homicide, because somebody, and you posed a tough question to us, somebody forgot that there was prior, quote-unquote, news information that was used by both the police and the papers and et cetera. And it just doesn't make sense, because in the paper 2 weeks ago, which can be, retrieved immediately, the police department, and I have reason to believe that Karasakis and Jose, who's sergeant, must have forgot what they had said when they said that the young man, now 19 years old, had indicated that he had never been in the home. Sir, all I can say to you, the evidence is there. That's just not true. That's not what the newspapers reported 5 years ago.
Yeah.
That there was an altogether different hypothesis and theory and et cetera. And so your question is a real tough one. You know, what was the motive? Well, the motive now is, and apparently for those who were observers at trial. And because it was a juvenile proceeding, you know, the public can't come in. that was well managed. And so what has basically happened is that the narratives and the story have changed. And the other thing that is disturbing is that ecumenical groups that met with the county attorney and council president Barb Johnson have not said anything. I don't know. I don't know what that means other than at some point in time people lost interest. But any additional questions for us?
No, that actually you just kind of answered my last question is where's the clergy that had information about the suspect in this? Is there going to be any, I mean, are they ever going to come forward or?
You know, sir, that is a good question. Mr. Allen and I in our production meetings have kind of looked at each other and said we find it rather peculiar because you would have thought, based on the documentation, news accounts, and et cetera, the common gossip that was going on at that time, 5 years ago, you would have thought that upon the decision by the district court here to certify this young man as an adult, you would have thought that the clergy and civil rights leaders that were in the forefront, smiling with the county attorney and et cetera, would have praised. Think about this, gentlemen, and Mr. Allen, like your observation. You would think that they would have praised the MPD for getting the right suspect. Mr. Allen, have we seen anything approaching that?
No, not at all, Mr. Edwards. Nothing whatsoever.
And so, Steve, sir, I have to say to you that was a serious mistake by the leadership, particularly given how they were publicized and identified as knowing who the murderer was and that they were going to turn that individual in. Well, it would seem just, you know, common sense would say that upon the quote-unquote police work, working with the FBI, by the way, that's when things really changed when they brought the FBI in, but that they would have said that the right individual has been certified as an adult. Mr. Allen and I in our production meetings have been saying to each other, where is the response and congratulations to the Minneapolis Police Department for the apprehension, if you will?
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Well, gentlemen, I'll listen off.
And we will keep you a bit abreast and et cetera. And by the way, we are still examining the situation with St. Louis police officer, African-American Lester Hall, beaten by his fellow white police officers in an undercover situation. And we'd like to talk to you and your people maybe in a couple of programs about what's the latest update on Lester Hall, African-American sergeant in the St. Louis City Police Department, beaten. That case now, I guess, getting ready to go to trial in St. Louis. But thank you for your inquiry, sir.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Allen, I guess we're not supposed to tell or talk about these kinds of things, but you know what I was responding to on behalf of us is that all of that's documented.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all that's documented. And I assume that Mike Patton, who has been on this program a couple of times, I assume that he is preparing a vigorous defense of his defendant, and in this case, his client. And I assume we'll be hearing him. But there's nothing that's happened since the certification. But, hey, we're just on the outside looking in. Anything else, Don? What do we got left? A couple of minutes?
Well, 347-426-3904. The phone lines are open, 347-426-3904. Star Tribune, I'm looking at the Star Tribune, Mr. Edwards, and they seem to be updating the stories on Raven Gant's shooting on the 2600 block of James Avenue before 10 p.m. on Thursday. And
isn't that fascinating?
They
started right after we started announcing that we were going to be discussing it. But go ahead. What can you share with us, Mr. Allen, because you're updating it, you're into their site.
Yeah, and they have some information from the call, the 911 call. It says, female still on site after she kicked the caller in the face. A dispatcher relayed to officers. Is that not enough right there, Mr. Edwards, to separate the two permanently?
Absolutely. And by the way,
yeah.
Raven is a very, petite and small woman. In that you brought it up, we are obligated to indicate that family members and others are saying that that is absolutely BS. But, hey, I assume, unless there's a plea bargain by the county attorney with the shooter, I assume that if it goes to trial, we'll hear testimony under oath, right?
Yeah, it'd be very interesting just to figure this all out. Again, Mr. Edwards, I was listening, that last caller, Steve from the Midwest, was talking about the Ms. Feller's case with the young man that was 14 years old at the time. And I'm unsure, why it was a heinous, crime, I'm very unsure at this point if they have the right person. And I don't know who has access to this young man, but it would be very curious to see what he has
to say
publicly.
Mike Patton is the attorney.
Yes.
Oh, you're talking about his family, because my understanding is no one from outside of the family has reached out to the family. I noticed that Mr. Patton, who we've had on this program a couple times over the years, has been very cautious with regards to saying anything in defense of his client. You have to understand, this is a very politically sensitive situation in that the lead investigator, Sergeant Ann Jost, received many accolades, if you will, upon the finding of additional evidence. First, we had the fingerprint 5 years ago, and then now they're saying to us that at the same time that morning they were in the home at 5100 DuPont, that she had clenched in her hand a nail clipper, and even in that nail clipper was a small piece of nail, which DNA clearly indicated that it was the 14-year-old murderer's DNA. So we had fingerprint and DNA. So I imagine that they made Judge Tanya Bransford's job very, very easy. I assume, with that kind of evidence. Mr. Allen, are you still with us? We've lost Mr. Allen. I don't know what's happened. That may be NSA or whatever. But Don, are you there? We've still got 3 minutes. Are you back, Don?
Yeah, I am back. That was really strange, Mr. Edwards. When you start talking about it, someone clipped the line, so I had to call back into the show.
My God, I've seen that happening far too much. That's NSA and top, and I think that the clip came when we pointed out that the FBI had been suddenly brought into the case a couple years ago, allegedly. In fact, they took a member of the Minneapolis Police Department's homicide unit and sent him to the FBI Academy so that he could familiarize himself and they could modernize cold case solving in the Minneapolis Police Department. And you're saying about that time, in fact, I'm hearing some background news, some background stuff now that clearly indicates to me.
Yeah, I'm going to have to use a landline next week. We have a really terrible connection. It seems to be good. I seem to be ironing it out here, running it through the landline. But we have a minute left of the show, Mr. Edwards. Any closing words?
No, but the Ron and Don program will continue to keep its eyes on all aspects of situations and circumstances important and relevant to the African-American community and, by extension, hopefully, to the broader community. Let me just say this in closing, Ms. Allen. Black community, be vigilant. Be are very, very dangerous times. Thank you, Don. Let James Brown take us home.